I'd like to call the Insurance and Banking Subcommittee meeting of January 8th to order. Michelle, would you please call the roll?
Chair Nelson?
Here.
Representatives Roxon, Caldwell, Goodson,
here.
Hager,
here.
Ingram,
here.
Jones, Lee,
here.
Moraitis,
here.
Representative Rader is excused. Santiago,
here.
Taylor,
here.
Tobiah,
here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. We also have Representative Jones and Rader, both are excused for today's meeting. I'd like to remind everybody in the public and also on the committee to please silence your cell phones. And anybody from the public who would like to speak, please fill out an appearance card and turn it into the staff. First off, for anybody who's here for HB 4005 by Representative Gates, that bill has been TP'd, so we will not be hearing that bill today. Okay. All right. Why don't we go ahead and take up then HB 291 by Representative Santiago relating to warranty associations. Representative Santiago, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Committee. HB 291 allows for contract forms to be sent either in paper format or electronic. It also amends the financial requirements to maintain capital surplus of $200 million and the A rating or better. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Taylor, you got any questions?
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Santiago, when these policies are being delivered, are some of these policies, do they have a shortened version of what the policy actually will cover? And if so, why?
Representative Santiago, you're recognized.
Well, as far as the purchase side of it, right? The purchase side of the product will describe what they're purchasing at the time, whether it's a service warranty or whatever the features pertaining to the covered product. The actual contractual document that shows the policy and everything that's covered in it will be delivered at this point afterwards via electronic, or if the person opts to have it in paper, it will be mailed in paper.
Follow-up question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Santiago, so when they get this electronic version, will this be the entire policy of what is included in the warranty as well as what's excluded? Because many of the times, some of these warranty companies, they say because it's not included that it's automatically excluded. And so it's a little bit confusing to the consumer when it pertains to them getting the coverage of the warranty.
Representative Santiago?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The actual bill itself doesn't change the current process of what warranties and service warranties are being written. So the underwriting guidelines, the actual covered and what's not covered is staying the same. What this particular bill is doing is just allowing them to opt them in to send it electronically or save it in paper. I mean, as far as, you know, what's covered and what's not covered and how that's displayed, that's something we can probably deal with in the future. But for these particular purposes, we're just opting whether we're going to send electronically or not.
Chairman.
Follow up?
No, I'm not talking about Representative Santiago. I'm talking about not the coverage of what they should cover. What I'm saying is many of the companies don't want to print a 300-page policy warranty document that clearly describes everything that they cover and and what they don't cover. And what I'm asking you is that will they be able to, because it's an electronic version, as opposed to printing these warranty copies that could be 300, 400 pages, will they then put all of what they're going to cover in that policy?
Representative Sean Taylor. It would be the exact same copy that would be administered in paper. So it'll be in electronic format. And even when they get the electronic format, they can still request the company to send them a paper version of it. And again, this is very similar to what we did last year with other insurance policies, where the same disclosures, all of those things will be exactly the same as is if they were to, as today, but in electronic format, which we all know we've been long supportive of for many years now.
Okay, Representative Hager, question?
Thank you, Chair, and I'm always appreciative of a dramatic entree for my questions, so thank you. Here's my question. My question is, just based on your assessment of this bill, what is the downside for the holder of a warranty? What's the downside for consumers in connection with your bill?
Representative Sangago?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question, Representative Hager. That's something that I evaluated very closely to make sure there was no detrimental effect to the consumer. It has no effect to the consumer. As a matter of fact, we're changing this now to requiring a $200 million surplus and continue to have an A rating or higher. So the way I see it, the assurances to the consumer are still there and probably better. It also allows the industry probably to grow even more, to create more competition. So I see it as a win-win kind of sort on both sides and still maintain the protections for the consumer.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay.
Representative Lee, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Representative Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those changes that you're saying, the financial requirements have changed or are changing, you're saying they're going to maintain a $200 million surplus. What is it now?
Representative Sanigago?
Currently, it's $100 million.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Anyone in the audience wishing to testify? We have a Tim, is that Meenan? Meenan? Yes. Okay. Thank you. Great. Anybody else wants to testify on the bill? Okay. All right. Representative Santiago, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Debate.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Debate. I wasn't trying to cut you off.
Can I do that, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Representative Santiago, I'm going to support this bill today, and I'm going to tell you one of the main reasons why I had some concerns, and prior to today's committee meeting, just prior to this meeting right now, I did meet with Mr. Meenan, and he helped clarify some of the things that and the concerns that I had in this bill. Now, one of the reasons why I'm questioning this, the electronic document, which is the policy on what, this is their Bible on what they're going to do and what they're not going to do for the consumer. And many of the times they didn't want to print the entire version of what's covered and what's not because the expense of doing that. Now that it's done electronically, I believe they should put the entire policy on what it is that they're going to cover and what they're not. Because what's been happening is that many of the warranty companies will say, well, it's not, we can't cover this part because it's not included in the policy. But it's not excluded in the policy. And so it becomes confusing to the consumer. So I just want them to say specifically what's included and what's excluded. And because something is not included doesn't mean that it's excluded. So, but I'm going to support that today mainly because of Mr. Meenan and him explaining this bill to me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other debate? All right. Michelle, would you please call the roll on House Bill 291?
Representatives Broxson, Caldwell, Goodson,
yes.
Hager,
yes.
Ingram,
yes.
Lee,
yes.
Moraitis,
yes.
Santiago,
yes.
Taylor,
yes.
Tobiah,
yes.
Chair Nelson,
yes. And by your vote, House Bill 291 passes out favorably. Next, we're going to take up House Bill 271 by Representative Cummings relating to workers' compensation. Representative Cummings, you're recognized.
Vice Chair, those members of the committee, for allowing me to present House Bill 271, which would amend
Chapter 440 in an effort by the CFO's office and DFS, Division of Workers' Compensation, with the goal of getting employers back up and running after a stop work order has been issued, as well as attempting to ensure that employers still comply, as well as maintain the employees' protection. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman, and available for any questions.
Questions? Representative Goodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, can you explain this to me, because I know very little about workman's comp? Repeals employer reporting requirements for a probationary period. How long is that period?
Representative Cummings?
I could have Mr. Sabalek from DFS speak to that, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Mr. Sabalek, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't need that provision anymore because it was a paper reporting requirement. We're tracking all the employers electronically, so it's real time, and that's a redundant provision in the law, which we don't need anymore.
Representative Goodson, follow up.
So that would mean that during this probation period where they don't have workman's comp, the person still has to report any labor that he has used to work in the state of Florida. Would that be a correct assumption on my part?
Mr. Chair, we track, we obtain all policy information to the division. It's sent to us electronically on a daily basis. And so when we identify when an employer is out of compliance and issue the stop work order and subsequently gets back into compliance, we can track that automatically through electronic means. So we don't need the additional data reporting from the employer themselves telling us that they have coverage.
Okay. Representative Goodson, one more question.
Can you tell me then if there's how many employers in the state of Florida, how many employees are employers? Give me both. Employers, employees. Are you proposing to get back to work by rewriting this or changing? Would you have a number?
Spock?
Mr. Chairman, on average, we're issuing between 2,500 to 3,000 stop work orders a year. And it's difficult to estimate the number of employees associated with each of those stop work orders because every employer has a different level of employees. But it affects every employer that is issued a stop work order.
Okay. I hate to do it, Mr. Chair.
I know you do. Representative Goodson.
Would you say this rewrite by allowing them, by changing the penalty, you're changing the penalty, I think you're going to strike 1 full year, go up 1.5% on the penalty, correct?
Well, why don't we get Representative Cummings back up and he can take over here.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Goodson. The premiums that were unpaid for up to 3 years would be 2 years. The multiplier would go from 1.5 to 2 times.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Goodson.
Representative Cummings, can you tell me, do you think that by doing this, are we rewarding bad behavior in the business sector and penalizing people that pay? Because I would assume there's 5 things that you pay as a businessman: bills, payroll taxes, federal taxes, your payroll, and your workman's comp. So would this reward people that don't pay?
Representative Cummings?
Representative Goodson, that's an excellent question. It's something that I was very mindful of in terms of there's a first-time offender piece of this that would allow those that get a credit on that first month's premium and still would have a minimum of $1,000 they would pay, even if they're the good actor that we're trying to make sure gets back up and running with their business. To further an answer for you is that, no, with the two-time multiplier in the 2 years, we feel that there's still strength that would penalize those that are trying to take advantage of the system and not protect their employees, while also making sure that those that I actually had one in my district, I know many of you I've spoken to in the past have, that it was an honest mistake, sometimes with his insurance carrier, who knows, and it was an inadvertent error. It allows them to get back up and running sooner, so we feel that if anything, it relieves a little bit of a lot of the regulatory burden, helps those such as you and your road building business, that if this ever happened to, not saying it would, you would be able to get back and run as soon as you could, and then while the others would be penalized significantly to make sure that this isn't going to be tolerated in our state.
Last one, sir, please.
You got it, Representative Goodson.
I appreciate that, and of course, what you might as a committee want to know that I just renewed my workman's comp, and the market is getting very tight. there's people that the insurance companies don't want to write it anymore for construction or depending on volume of people you have. And the other comment I would say about...
Is it a question or is this a comment?
It's going to be kind of a question when I get there. I cannot, if you're in, Mr. Cumby, if you're a representative, if you're in business, would you not realize that with a workman's comp payment every month you get a 5 to 10% discount if you're paid on time? So to forget it and call it an error, as a businessman, I would find that totally unacceptable, but I'd like your opinion on that.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and Representative Goodson, I know you're aware, but I want to remind you that you've got three members of your committee that are in the business of providing you a great competitive insurance policy and product, so hopefully you'll look to Chair Nelson, Representative Lee, and Representative Broxson for your next renewal, and deal with some folks that really share your public service. I would say that, yes, you know, one would think that, but I know I had a dental practice, and great reputable dentist. You know, folks get busy. They're running a business is, as you know, not only more burdensome or time-consuming than ever. The patient load, and it was his wife that was managing the books in the office, and who he wasn't very happy with after this happened. And, you know, next thing you know, they've got a stop work order. They're canceling 3 or 4 days of patient load. And as we looked into this was happening in a lot of our districts. And so while, yes, you would think this would not happen, it does, and that's why there's a first-time offender provision that still slaps them on the wrist, but pretty significantly, but also make sure that we recognize we want to get them up and running, and it won't happen again. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Hager, question?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Mr. Representative Cummings, for the presentation. I want to recognize, first of all, in connection with your answer to Mr. Goodson, your outstanding fleet of footness in terms of responding to him. Here's my question. My question is, the highest priority of Florida's workers' compensation law is our workers. And protecting our workers. That's the first order of business and it's the first obligation of this legislature with respect to such legislation. So my question is there anything about this legislation, this bill is drafted, that would adversely affect our workers?
Representative Cummings?
Chairman Nelson, thank you, Vice Chair Hager. And I would say no. I really feel that it is still very consumer-friendly, employee-friendly. There is some cleanup language as it relates to the calculation due to the Escambia-Vickery-Orso case about the 66 and two-thirds versus the .6667 that really was necessary. And I know your fine staff had recognized that as well and supported that. And that actually is friendly to the employee from a calculation standpoint is what their benefit would be.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Broxson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Cummings, this is a phenomenal first step to solving a real problem. And I do have a question, but currently, because of legislative directive, a person or business is guilty until proven innocent. This bill corrects that. Would you agree that we are putting our business people in a better position when we make a mistake, maybe 1 in 1,000, to stay in business rather than being out of business?
Representative Cummings?
Chairman Nelson, thank you, Representative Broxson. I fully agree, and this is something that early as a legislator, I had a experience that I shared before you came in that I realized was prevalent throughout the state that I'm sure you dealt with in your district that really proved them guilty. And me knowing the situation intimately, I knew that wasn't the case, and it really was had a severe disruption for not only the financial result of this business, but also caring for patients and this case in the community. So thank you for your support, and you're right on.
Follow-up, is that good? Okay, good. Representative Goodson, you got another question.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I ask this question, sir? If a person is notified he has no workman's comp insurance, then he would be forced to tell his employees to stay home or work them at their own risk. Is that not correct?
Representative Cummings?
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Thank you, Representative Goodson and Mr. Spall. Can correct me, but no, they would, if they're not compliant, they essentially have a stop work order, meaning that it's illegal for them to operate now. After that, we allow them, based on whether they're a first-time offender, particularly there's a $1,000 down payment provision that says that they can get back up to working in a more timely manner. There's a provision that allows them to pay the penalty once it's determined on a schedule, as well as giving them 5 additional days to produce the records. But what happens many times is difficult, although I'm sure your business is not such, but on some occasions it's just hard for them to find all of the records, and they're not as organized. It gives them a little more time, but particularly with a good actors, as I think Representative Broxson was referring to, allows them to pay the $1,000. And once that is met, then they are able to be granted the ability to open up their business. Till any of that happens, they're shut down in their entirety.
Representative Goodson?
Well, then, to get people back to work, like the bill is talking, and I'm going to vote for the bill. I'm just going to watch the bill because I'm a little concerned because, first of all, you know, you talk about records, and by law you're required to keep records 7 years for the IRS. And I assume everybody knows what date that comes due, because if you miss it, they're not going to give you a multiplier of 2 or 1.5. They're going to take your stuff. But do you not, these people, has anybody done a study to see if this is a reoccurring factor among certain companies or certain type companies, sir?
Representative Cummings. Thank you, Chair Nelson. Thank you, Representative Goodson. Clearly in working with DFS, when not only I experienced this was something that with a constituent of my district, a business owner, but as they looked throughout the state, they recognized, particularly CFO Atwater, that this was an issue that could be definitely more business friendly while still protecting the employees and the workplace. But as the upwards of 3,000 stop work orders that are issued a year by our state, there was a good number that this was something that was not isolated to one issue or even multiple, that was significant, that felt that their studies show that this would, an analysis would be good policy moving forward.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Any other questions, members? Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Cummings, let me try, and I understand the nature of what the bill does, but in the process of people establishing business in the state, is there any mechanism that alerts them that they need to get workman's comp coverage when they're establishing their business? If you're going to go and own a construction company, you open up the business in the state, is there somewhere along the line where they're told that they need to get workman's comp?
Representative Cummings?
Thank you, Chair Nelson, and thank you, Representative Taylor. And, you know, Mr. Smollett maybe helped me a little bit in terms of the permitting or applying for licenses and at what time, but I know that obviously construction-related businesses of one or more employees are mandated to have workers' comp. Obviously, non-construction employees with 4 or more, 4 or part-time employees. Mr. Smollett, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair, just let us know at what point in the process would they be notified and really strictly told to inherit by paying premiums and getting coverage.
Mr. Smollett, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are working with the Department of Revenue and the one-stop business registration portal, and one of the key components of that one-stop business registration portal will be information about the workers' compensation coverage requirements. So when an employer starts their business initially, they will have the opportunity to read that information and determine whether they need coverage or not.
And Mr. Smollett, we need you to fill out a report.
Yes, I have one.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good? Okay. All right. Super. Any other questions? Okay, super. Anyone from the audience? We've got several folks. Logan McFadden. Okay. Jim Brainerd. Great. And Slater Bayless. Great. Thank you. All right. Members, any debate? Representative Broxson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to applaud the CFO and Mr. Sabalik. We brought this issue to them, brought several documents to them, and they were very aware that we had a problem. It tells me that we have a process both between the cabinet and the legislature that when there are problems that are presented to us by constituents, that we can work them out. As I said before, what we were doing is that on a Friday afternoon, if a person was shut down and they could present a certificate, a valid certificate, they could be shut down for a week. Now, can you imagine if you're a restaurant that has perishable items or other type businesses, a weekend would in essence close you for the life of the business. This puts the burden of proof back on the department and says, in the meantime, if you can provide evidence and insurance, we'll allow you to stay in business. We're going to continue to do our due diligence. We're going to fine you $1,000. We're going to let you get insurance. And if we prove that you have not had insurance for the last 2 years, there's going to be a stiff penalty. But we're not going to require that you pay it all in advance. We're going to give you some terms. This tells me that Florida is interested in keeping good businesses going. It's a good signal that we're protecting our consumer, but we're also protecting those people that are putting their life on the line to start a business. And now we're saying to them, if you make a mistake, we're going to help you. If you've not made a mistake, we're not going to punish you. So again, I want to thank the department and thank you for bringing this good bill that says that we're doing the right thing in Tallahassee.
Great. Thank you. Representative Taylor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I like the bill, too. I like the bill because, as it was when I asked the question, are business owners educated on going out to purchase the workman's comp? And clearly, there's no mechanism that, and I'm glad to see that you're doing that now, where when they open this business, they know from the very start that they need to have workman's comp. And many of the times, for those first offenders, they're operating out of no education on whether or not they needed to get it. And so what this does is it makes them go out and get the coverage that those employees need. So if that employee gets injured on the job, they have some way of being covered. So I like that the employees will be covered. The other thing I like is the flexibility that the CFO's office will have in not being so rigid and stern in stopping the work and not being able to come back fairly quickly and allow that person to go back and open up and continue. And that tells me that this legislation is more business friendly and that they're not going to punish someone for the lack of education on what they should and should not have done in this state. So thank you, Representative Cummings. I'm going to go ahead and vote up on this bill. Thank you.
Representative Goodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'd like to apologize for any rudeness I might have shown. Let me offer a hand out for your condolences. I do resent the fact that every time we talk about something, it's always construction, but I'm glad to hear you say a dentist did this. With that being said, though, I will caution you on a few things that, you know, already in the state of Florida, if you have less than so many employees, you only have to have workman's comp. If every one of your employees are an officer, which is usually fraudulent, you don't have to have that either. They can waive that right. So all that being said, I do have concerns when, and anybody that's going to go into business in Florida, anybody of any age that's watched TV and seen your local, if you get injured on the job, call us, workman's comp. You know you have to have workman's comp. You know you have to protect your employees. I am concerned that we're fixing to reward bad behavior. Now, you know, will it be somebody else next week? I don't know, because you know, as an employer, you have workman's comp. You know that's a monthly bill. They don't give you, you don't pay it once a year like your federal taxes. Even if you make money, you pay quarterly. So you know that. You know your property taxes. And I'm concerned that we're doing this. I want to keep businesses open and all that, but for me to try to stomach the fact that a businessman didn't know or let his workman's comp go, that's like letting your general liability go. So I would be curious to know if I let mine go and my employee got hurt during the period I had no workman's comp, who does he file against? Who does he get coverage from then at that point? Because I had none.
You?
Personally, he would have to go to court, liable, and litigate in court against me.
So, you know, workman's comp is a very serious thing. I'm voting for it. I wish you well, and I'll watch it, but let me apologize for anything I might have asked. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hager.
Thank you, Chair. I also am going to vote for this bill. I think two things are important here. One is we recognize the fine work here, which is to make this process as efficient on the front end as it relates to the businesses as possible. But I think it's also important that we continue to send the message. I'm glad the Division of Workers' Compensation is here. We ought to applaud them for being vigorous in enforcing our law. We ought not have any worker ever in a situation where we have an injury and we have no coverage. And so I think it's important that we send a dual signal, and that is to encourage Division of Workers' Compensation to continue to do their regulatory work and concurrent with your bill also provide a facility for as efficient reattribution of the business affected.
Great. Thank you. Any other debate? Okay. Representative Cummings, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the feedback, and I've taken some good notes, including the constructive concerns and feedback from Representative Goodson, and I'll adhere to that, and as we move this bill forward in that effort, I'll waive close.
Thank you. Michelle, would you call the roll on HB 271, please?
Representatives Broxson?
Yes.
Caldwell?
Yes.
Goodson?
Yes.
Hager?
Yes.
Ingram?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Moraitis?
Yes.
Santiago?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Tobiah?
Yes.
Chair Nelson?
Yes. And by your vote, HB 271 passes unanimously. Thank you, Representative Cummings. Last up, we take up PCB IBS 14-01, and Representative Moraitis is going to be offering up the PCB for us. This PCB was proposed by the Department of Financial Services, and the first Representative Moraitis will be the first named co-sponsor. Representative Moraitis, you are recognized to explain the PCB.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I definitely want to thank the CFO's office for all their hard work and for running this program. And I'm going to go ahead and explain the program a little bit and then some of the changes. Basically, when a government entity in the state wants to set up a deposit in a bank account, they have to do it with a qualified public depository, which would be a bank. And then the qualified public depository has to meet certain requirements to hold that. This is in addition to any coverage that the deposit would have under FDIC, which is, you know, most cases limited to $250,000. So, you know, many of these entities have much larger deposits.
Ooh,
just a bad sign?
Oh, yes, let's go.
Move to close, George.
Close. Somebody back there in the back.
Back in the back room. You leaned up against.
There you go.
It's not the credit union bill, sir.
We already voted.
Anyway, so a couple of things that this bill does. There's never been a loss to a government entity under this program for the last 30 years. And so there's some concern that some of the requirements, particularly some of the collateralization requirements, where the depository, if they're starting to run into financial trouble, has to put up more and more money on deposit or pledged, or in some cases even actually deposit money with the CFO's office. Some of this can sort of, the concern is because the requirements are so high that when a bank is facing problems, they have to put up 200% of the amount of the deposit. That can end up creating even more liquidity problems, as we saw. Again, in the last crisis, there were no losses to a government entity. And even if there is a problem with the collateral, the rest of the qualified public depositories in the states can be assessed by the CFO's office to cover the government entity's deposits. So it's a very well-run and conservative program, and these changes, frankly, are to help some of the smaller community banks participate in public deposits. Particularly, there is a change to the two highest collateral pledge levels from 200 and 150% down to 150 and 110%. According to the DFS, this is among the highest in the country for a qualified public depository program. Removing some of the reports that are frankly duplicative with the federal government's requirements, instead of having to mail the report to the CFO's office and to the federal government, they can just file with the federal government and the CFO's office can get them online. removing the Qualified Public Depository Oversight Board. It's only been one time. This was supposed to have been a group of basically people in the industry to help the CFO's office, you know, help make decisions as they went through the process with a troubled bank. But the feeling is, among the people that would sit on this, that this is sort of a conflict of interest because these are competitors, and so people just weren't really willing to serve on the board. And the CFO's office does the function through the staff anyway. And so that's the bill. I'm going to be able to answer any questions about it.
Questions, members? Okay. No questions? Okay. So we got some folks in the audience. Logan McFadden wants to testify. Thank you. And Kim Samokas? Thank you. Okay. Members, any debate? Any debate on PCB? PCB. Okay. Representative Moritis, you recognize the close on the bill.
Very close. Thank you.
All right. Michelle, would you call the roll on PCB, IBS 14-01?
Representatives Roxon?
Yes.
Caldwell?
Yes.
Goodson?
Yes.
Hager?
Yes.
Ingram?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Moritis?
Yes.
Santiago?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Tobiah?
Yes.
Chair Nelson?
Yes. And by your vote, PCB, IBS 14-01 passes out unanimously. Thank you, Representative Moritis. Okay. Any other committee, subcommittee business? All right. I'd like to thank the presenters, public, for coming. I'd like to say Representative Lee for motion to adjourn without objection. Motion passes unanimously.
Here, here.
Hey, Chair.